Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. Today we have a very interesting discussion. It's between Ronnie Cummins, Leslie Manoukian, and Charles Hugh Smith. I'm Richard Manoukian. Ronnie is co-founder and international director of the Organic Consumers Association and its Mexico affiliate, Via Organica. He's been an active writer and activist since the 1960s, with extensive experience in public education, grassroots mobilization, marketplace pressure campaigns. Over the past two decades, he served as director of U.S. and international campaigns dealing with sustainable agriculture issues, including food safety, genetic engineering, factory farming, and global warming. From 1992 to 98, Ronnie served as a campaign director for the Foundation on Economic Trends in Washington, D.C. And Leslie is president and founder of Health Freedom Defense Fund and a former successful Wall Street business executive. Her career in finance took her from New York to London with Goldman Sachs. She later became director of Alliance Capital in London, running their European growth portfolio management and research businesses. And Charles is author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, The Nearly Free University and the Emerging Economy, Pathfinding Our Destiny, Preventing the Final Fall of Our Democratic Republic, and Will You Be Richer or Poorer? He's also got a most recent book that focuses on global crisis, national renewal, a grand strategy that is very applicable to this discussion. His blog of twominds.com is one of CNBC's top alternative finance sites. Welcome, Ronnie, Leslie, and Charles.
Thank you.
Good to be Thanks here. For having us, Richard. Great to be here with all these honored guests.
Great, so I thought we begin with an initial discussion and review. Charles, we've done some podcasts on the Great Reset, and what your thoughts are on that, and the whole concept of a society trying to get to zero risk, right, at least on the surface, and also some recent trends that are happening involving the Great Reset agenda in terms of linking some new potential viruses, monkeypox and Asian influenza virus, to name them specifically, and how that's beginning to affect agriculture and farming. Your thoughts, Charles, initially?
Oh, okay. Well, I think my fellow guests probably have more insights than I have to offer, but I'll just offer the Great Reset, which listeners know that Richard and I have covered in a couple of different podcasts before, which I welcome you to revisit if you haven't, that the Great Reset is the kind of globalist agenda of centralizing virtually everything: capital, resources, control of resources, and monitoring the commoners as the quote solution to elite overreach and overconsumption. Needless to say, that doesn't make any sense. And so what we're discussing here is an alternative view of the dynamics of the world and a path that is actually heading towards sustainability without further centralization, actually taking the other path of decentralization and community economies as opposed to centralized bureaucratic elite-dominated economies and societies.
Great. And Ronnie, if you can give a bit of background on your association, Organics Consumers Association, and your recent mandate with Regeneration International called Regeneration Health International, that initiative?
Yeah, we started Organic Consumers Association in the United States in 1998 because there wasn't really a mass organization representing the views and the aspirations of organic consumers. So we were able to grow quite a bit over the years. And we were never single issue. We tried to connect food and farming and land use to health, to the environment, to climate, to war and peace and participatory democracy. So over time, we became a family of organizations. Really, there's five organizations that work together very closely. Regeneration International does our international work. Most of its staff are in Mexico, but we have staff in Zimbabwe and Australia and France and Miramar at this point. We have 400 affiliates in 65 countries. So the idea of Regeneration International is to link together the organic and regenerative farms and advocacy organizations into a stronger group. In 2014, when we set up Regeneration International with people like Vandana Shiva and John Liu and Andre Lowe, Hans Herren, Reginaldo Marroquin, and a whole group of people, we thought that it was possible to bring together on a global level the food and farming movement to start talking more about climate and get the climate movement to start talking about more about food and farming and land use. And health was always at the center. I mean, one of the founding groups of Regeneration International was Dr. Mercola's organization. And at the time, there was no talk about regeneration. That was kind of an obscure term. But our first goal was to change the global conversation on climate and change the global conversation on food and farming, and to use the notion of regeneration, which is just really the next stage of organic. And as Vandana Shiva puts it, regenerative food and farming provide a solution to the soil crisis, the environmental crisis, the food crisis, the climate crisis, and the crisis of democracy. So we set ourselves a big goal, but we have made regeneration a buzzword all over the world, and it's coming into its own. And when COVID broke out, I was in the middle of a book tour in the United States on my book about regenerative food and farming called Grassroots Rising. And when the country shut down, I had to shut down my book tour on that. And then I got together with Dr. Mercola and Robert Kennedy, and we wrote a book called The Truth About COVID-19. And that became a bestseller, but not a single review and not a single bookstore would sell it. So, and politicians like Elizabeth Warren openly threatened Amazon to put our book, if you will, on the bottom shelf and for booksellers to not sell it. So Barnes & Noble and, you know, independent bookstores wouldn't sell it. And Amazon did their best to depress our sales, but it sold over 350,000 copies so far. And it kind of paved the way for Robert Kennedy's incredible book, the Fauci book. The Truth About... That's a phenomenal book. And that book has sold over a million copies already, in spite of the fact that bookstores won't sell it, no one will review it, and Amazon has done their best to retard the sales, but it's failed. So our network is in Mexico's Via Orgánica and Asociación de Consumidores Orgánicos, and we are trying to identify the best practices of regenerative and organic food and farming around the world, land use. We're trying to highlight those best practices. And we believe that if we scale up the best practices that already exist across the world, pretty much in every region or every county even, that we can not only mitigate global warming, but we can actually reverse it if we, in combination with, of course, alternative energy and energy conservation. And then, as we thought we were coming out of the censorship, the repression, the slander, the attacks on us, then the Ukraine crisis popped up, and now Facebook is threatening to kick us off Facebook for not just for what we say about vaccine safety and COVID, but if we dare talk about Ukraine in a more nuanced or truthful manner than what the mass media say. So we've got over 2 million followers on social media and about 300,000 subscribers, but it's our alliance with Mercola, with Children's Health Defense, with the National Health Freedom Coalition and others, Weston Price, that we believe is the most important. We need a global alliance of the grassroots. We believe down the road that the everyday people in China, the everyday people in Russia, the everyday people in Iran, and all over the place feel the same way about their governments and feel the same way about big corporations and gangster type capitalism that we do. And someday we're going to have a global rising, and we're going to have a new reset, but it's not going to be the reset that the World Economic Forum and Gates and the rest of them, the Chinese Communist Party, are implementing or trying to implement.
Very interesting. And Leslie, what do you make of the Great Reset agenda and the links to what's happening on like health-related agendas and the link to food and agriculture that they have in the Great Reset agenda?
Well, so first of all, you know, I run Health Freedom Defense Fund, which is a nonprofit committed to educating about our health freedoms. Most Americans don't even know what their freedoms are anymore, what their rights are, and then advocating for them and litigating when necessary in order to defend them. And so it was our group that struck down the Biden administration's travel mask mandate about 6 weeks ago, not quite 6 weeks ago. And that's just a good example of the kind of work that we're doing. You know, we're suing the Los Angeles Unified School District, the second largest school district in America, to challenge their vaccine mandate, their COVID injection mandate. And we've got many, many other lawsuits that are in the works on this, you know, so we've got so much of that stuff going on. So I just wanted to make sure that people understand the kind of context that I bring. And then what I really want to say is that there's no doubt that no one of these things is happening in isolation. It's called the Great Reset because it is a great agenda, a great plan, an all-encompassing one, which they hope will capture everybody but the elite and essentially ensure that there's a massive surf class around the world in service to the rulers, right? And these are the CEOs of the giant corporations and those who run these giant private foundations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Open Society Foundation, things like that. And then of course, all the NGOs and other government leaders. They're not our public servants any longer. They haven't been for a very long time. They are working in service to other entities. And one of the big issues that most of our countries face as well is this, what we call administrative creep, which is the expansion of the administrative state. So for viewers to understand, our way of our rule of law in the United States is supposed to follow three things. There's supposed to be three equal branches of government: the executive, which is the president, the Congress, which is the legislative branch, and then the judicial, which is the Supreme Court. And most countries have something similar like this, similar in some ways. And then there's this massive administrative apparatus, that a bureaucracy that's grown up underneath the executive, which has rendered our leaders more like kings and queens than public servants. And this is one of the biggest problems. And one of the ways that they are using that power they've accumulated over recent decades to weaponize it against the public. And so I 100% agree with with what Ronnie and Charles already mentioned about the Great Reset and its comprehensive agenda. And I just think that health is one of the pillars, right? Ronald Reagan actually said many decades ago when he was president that one of the ways that the New World Order would be implemented would be through the back door under the guise of public health, that that's how socialism would be foisted upon us. And boy, it sure seems like that's happening, doesn't it? So if you ask me, you know, all the things that we're talking about are related to health, right? Because we are strong, we are thoughtful, we are kind, we are healthy individuals when we have good food, when we have true medicine, not pharmaceutical and chemical-based drugs, but true medicine, right? Whether it's homeopathic remedies or herbs or whole food supplements or whatever it might be, right? These are different kinds. And then there's, of course, there's energy medicines like acupuncture and all these things. But my point is true health comes from ancient and true healing modalities, not from a bottle, not from a syringe, and certainly not from factory farmed food. And so, you know, you look at all these things, whether it's fluoride or it's, you know, that's in our water, or if it's mercury amalgams in people's teeth, mercury in vaccines, aluminum in vaccines, you look at the GMOs, you look at the pesticides, all these things, they're all connected, right? And they all undermine the health of all of us, each and every one of us. And I haven't even got into chemtrails and things like that. I won't go into those. But my point is that this is all part of a massive agenda, an orchestrated one, it seems, to really sicken the populace. And I think that's the only thing that you can possibly conclude after decades and decades of us all fighting back. I mean, I can ask the three of you, how many of you voted for GMO salmon? How many of you wanted that, right? None of us did. How many of us wanted fluoride in our water? None of us. How many of us want Roundup everywhere? GMO corn and soy and soybean? No, none of us want this. And they're all a critical component, deleterious one, to our health and well-being. And so I'm very much in line with their thinking and feel that this is only one piece of it. The other piece of it I've actually talked to you about on your show before is the whole financial piece, right? There's this massive financial component, which is critical for successful implementation of this digital control system that they're trying to implement. And we can go into that, but I'll leave it there for now.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Charles, on this, sir?
Well, I'm fascinated by and great admiration of Ronnie and Leslie's work to organize a global educational and physical real world response to this these issues. And I would just kind of want to emphasize what the points they already made, that it is all tied together. And just want to mention it's to your point, Richard, your question or the topic of risk is that what we're told in this sort of centralized narrative is we can eliminate risk if you give us all the power to print as much money as we want, give it to whomever we want, centralize agriculture. So there's a handful of firms that control everything, use chemicals and GMO modification to increase the efficiency of the food, et cetera, et cetera. And it sort of boils down to, you know, if Bill Gates buys another million acres of farmland, we're going to have a solution, you know? And I'm saying that it's somewhat in jest, but that's more or less the agenda, right? If we just give the super rich and the super wealthy corporations and the administrative state that Leslie described more power, then we're going to have a lower risk, better life. And of course, the answer is that systemically, all those things make the systems more fragile. And this is what we're seeing, you know, when you give all the power to central bankers, then the financial system's fragile. When you give all the power to agribusiness, a handful of firms, then that becomes fragile. And the anti-fragility is that Nassim Taleb talks about is actually the way we want to go. Is the answer is not a million acres more in Bill Gates' hands or in his philanthrocapitalist organization. it's a million farms being operated, or home farms, home gardens operated by people who care about their land, their soil, their health, and are willing to share what they've learned and share what they're growing. And this is completely counter to the whole idea of, as Ronnie said, gangster capitalism, which is how can we extract more wealth from, you know, the peasantry, and instead of how can we actually help people improve their life and actually have a lot more fun. Because gardening to me is like a real pleasure, and it ties into the core of being a human, is to raise animals and to raise food and share it and then prepare it. And so that's kind of my thing. If you want to lower risk, you've got to listen closely to what Ronnie and Leslie are saying and take control of your own life and build the community around you, not relying on these like highly integrated, highly centralized organizations, because they're actually increasing the world's risk.
Very interesting. And Ronnie, can you elaborate a bit more on the Regeneration Health International initiative and how that can help to, in reality, to meet many of the UN Sustainable Development Goals that the Great Reset Agenda purports to target? But, you know, with the Regeneration Health International initiative, it does it better, more efficiently, and overall provides that link to health as part of Leslie's mandate.
Yeah, well, I think that term regeneration is very, very important. We debated that a long time, and Vanda Nashiva and myself and Andre Lowe convinced our global steering committee that that was the term we needed to describe the food, farming, and land use system that we needed. But we all had a lot of experience in, you know, what we used to call alternative health or integrative health, or, you know, and, you know, what we looked at, like in the United States, when I started working with Dr. Mercola and a coalition called Health Liberty, with groups fighting against mercury and for vaccine safety and, you know, against toxic teeth. What we said was, look, the United States has about 100 million people who occasionally or regularly buy organic food. But a lot of these 100 million people still rely on big pharma medicine, you know, for their healthcare needs, mainly out of ignorance or fear of death or whatever, brainwashing. But then you look on the other side, there's about 100 million people in the United States who buy nutritional supplements or who occasionally or regularly visit holistic practitioners. But the odd thing is, it's changing, but the odd thing is a lot of those folks, still buy conventional food, you know, eat out in restaurants, poison themselves, and we're not conscious, organic, regenerative consumers. And then you had the problem in both communities, this problem of, obviously everyone in America would buy organic food tomorrow. If you look at the polls where African-Americans, Latinos, Asians, they have a higher understanding of food safety and the value of organic than white people do, Caucasians. Well, why aren't they all the organic consumers? Well, it's very simple. When they go to the grocery store and they look at the prices and they look at what's in their wallet, they don't have enough money to buy all organic. And the same thing goes for the health freedom movement. You know, it's just like a lot of low income folks and ethnic communities, they know big pharma's not out to help them. They understand they have some recognition of their traditional healing methods and so on and so forth. But the alternative health movement or natural health movement in the United States, in my opinion, has not gone all the way to make sure that low-income people have access to information, natural health information, and have the wherewithal to, you know, get supplements, to visit practitioners. And so we've got to solve this problem of justice at the same time that we bring together alternative health and alternative food people.
Very interesting. And Leslie, your thoughts on the observations from Ronnie, and also how your organization helps to address some of these challenges, especially the adverse effects and consequences from the Great Reset Agenda, and also promoting the Regeneration Health International Initiative.
You know, 35 years ago, the average American spent about 35% of their disposable income on food. Maybe it was 40 years ago, I forget the exact date. And in the early 2000s, before the Great Recession in 2008-09, that had risen to about, or that had fallen to about 8%. And then it bumped up to about 12% after the Great Recession. But my point is that how do we go from several decades from where Americans spent 35% of their income, disposable income, on food, real food, to this place now where they were actually only spending 8% of their disposable income? And what are they doing? They're, you know, they're buying SUVs and keeping up with the Joneses and all these other things, right? There's all this stuff going on, right? It wasn't a real decline in the cost of producing food. It was subsidies to the massive agricultural, you know, they're not even they're food corporations, right? This is not agriculture. It's not farming. It's factory farming, right? There's a huge difference. And so that's how they got the prices down to, and people were like, hey, great, you know, my eggs only cost 99 cents a dozen now. Never mind that they're garbage, right? I mean, they are garbage. Literally, people are paying 99 cents for a dozen eggs. That's insanity. And, you know, organic appears expensive because of the fact that it's still produced the way that it's supposed to be, so that it's nutritious on pasture, you know, chickens pecking and eating and rooting for bugs and grubs and all the things they do, eating grass and all these things. That's what makes a beautiful yellow orange egg yolk, which is packed with vitamin A and vitamin K and the other things that actually nourish our bodies and keep us smart, healthy, strong, right? All these things. So my point is, it's deliberate. It's not an accident that these things have happened. And concurrent with that, you had the increased focus on pesticides and GMOs, right? These things are not an accident either. And they're all subsidized. They're not subsidizing people who have small, independent biodynamic farms and organic farms, integrated farms, right? They're not subsidizing those people. They're not subsidizing Joel Salatin at Polyface or any of the other farms, US Wellness Meats and these guys. They're not doing that because they are actually competition to the agenda, which is centralization of everything in order to amass control. So it's all sold to the public under the pretext that you'll be safer, it'll be more resilient, you'll be happier, you know, all these kinds of things. It'll be less fragile, all those things, but that's what's going on. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the food thing because I think that's a really important thing to understand. Then let's look at some of the health stuff that's on, you know, that's built on sustainable, resilient, natural, integrated farming. The whole, the whole food supply, right? The whole supply chain from animals there who are fertilizing the land to keep it nutrient rich. And then we're growing more nutrient rich foods for ourselves. They keep us strong and robust, and then we're healthier, and then we're more able to fight back too and organize ourselves. But so you need food, you need medicine, you need education, so local schools, you need a local currency. These are the kinds of things I think that we should all be working on.
Yeah, just going around the table for the last thoughts, Ronnie, the same question. What about like the programs and initiatives that you're doing as suggestions in a positive way to meet challenges?
That's the birth of Regeneration Health International was exactly that. Leaders in the vaccine safety movement and health freedom movement want to create a positive alternative. You know, our sub theme is food is medicine, you know, and we need to change the medical paradigm because, you know, I spend half my time on positive stuff. You know, I'm on the front lines of trying to scale up regenerative food and farming practices, particularly here in Mexico. A semi-arid, arid regenerative system that can feed animals and people, that can sequester carbon and save water and eliminate poverty and forced migration. So keeps me sane to spend half my time developing the positive alternatives. And the idea behind Regenerative Health International is let's focus on the fact that we can't, you know, it's not just that we can improve people's health, we can actually regenerate it. We can make people healthier than they were before, just like you can regenerate soils. And, you know, the whole idea of regeneration as opposed to just organic food and farming is that we're going further. We're going to the next step. We're going to have, you know, food that's organic, but it's actually healthier than organic, whether it's labeled or not. And so I think it's my experience as an organizer is that if you load down people, you know, in general, there's certain people who can hear what we're saying today. And of course, they're all going to agree on it. I mean, people like Russell Brand, you know, have millions of viewers now. And but I think we also have to be aware that you've got to have a positive solution. And it needs to be not only a solution, you know, decentralization, obviously, but we have to have a program for how this is going to spread and how you go from where you are now to making this transition, because a lot of people are in a bind now. They agree with us, but they don't know how to take those next steps forward. So there's 3 billion people in the world who are small farmers or live in rural villages. And that's the segment that I concentrate on a lot because they're key. And they respond the best to seeing with their own eyes the positive solutions, you know, and believing that they can help. But beyond that, the big challenge for regeneration, it's not that we haven't figured out what to do, you know, for everything, health, food, farming, land use, you know, politics, we know what to do. The problem is, how do you scale it up? How do you expand these best practices? And that's what I'm one of my obsessions at this point. If we can't get the money out of governments because we don't control the governments, where in the hell are we going to get the money? You know, how are we going to scale these things up? How do we turn our decentralized new economy into something that people can survive economically with, and so on? And this global grassroots rising, this global radical decentralization, has got to be coordinated, you know, horizontally amongst us. So, you know, Africa, and so, I mean, that's the reason why we're trying to work with our affiliates globally, is like, it's really different in Africa to try to implement some of these things when you literally are on the verge of starvation, you know, when literally, you know, like this great green wall that we're now working to incorporate our agroforestry system into. I mean, we're starting out in northern Nigeria to use agaves and nitrogen fixing plants as part of this reforestation program to stop the Sahara Desert from expanding and create some livelihoods. But we were talking this morning, the problem is that what do they call Boko Haram is operating in many of these areas. And when I come across people like y'all, I realize, you know, every day that there are those of us, there are many, many, many millions of us across the world who are not only not giving up, but who are going to fight and organize and educate. And the last thing is it's very important. I have a 24-year-old son, and he tells me, look, Dad, I'm so glad to have you and Mom who are active in all this. You actually think we're going to solve these problems? He said, none of my friends have any hope. you know, that we can actually solve these problems. And I think we have to enjoy ourselves as we go forward, and we have to make sure that we're also broadcasting a subliminal message. The kids can tell if we're bullshitting them, and we got to make sure that we save time to spend with the younger generation and ourselves, to where people realize we had a slogan in the 60s, there's only one reason to be a revolutionary, because it's the best way to live, you know? And that type movement, nothing can stop us, so.
I have to respond to that, Richard.
Okay, sure.
You have to give me a second.
Yeah.
First of all, I just have to say, thank you, Ronnie. That was one of the sweetest things anybody's ever said to me. I just am so grateful. I think about all the people, you know, there are so many people I look up to and am inspired by, and I've followed your work for 2 decades, and I just really appreciate it. I just, it really warmed my heart, so thank you. Secondly, I want to say that I think that that thing that you mentioned, that you know is out there, some people call it source, some people call it the field, some people call it God, and some people call it love. Some people call it truth, and maybe it's a combination of both of those things. That's my view. And where I want to go is to creating the new paradigm on the other side of that, on the other side of this. And I don't know if it's going to end in 6 months. I don't think so. I don't think it's going to end in a few years, even. I think it's going to be a long time, possibly. But we are all here for a reason. We are all here because we were born for this moment, and we are going to get to rebuild in a beautiful way so that future generations can have a very, very different life than the one that we've experienced, not just in the last 2 years, but in the last century. I just wanted to share that because I feel like that is, for me, that's what motivates me. And I think that that is one of the ways that I try and keep myself sane too, because right, if I only ever focused on all the negativity, you could get so depressed with all this stuff, or we can focus on, okay, this is the reality of what we face. What are we going to do about it? And how are we going to make it better for the future? And so I feel like you've been railing against the system for 20 years, right, Ronnie? For much longer, but as long as I've been focused on or following you, it's been 20 years. And you've been railing against the system, and so have I. So let's let it fall, and let's rebuild the one that we want. And that gives me joy and inspiration and hope.
Mm-hmm. Great words of wisdom. Thank you. And a final word by Charles.
I just want to say I'm in awe and admiration for Ronnie and Leslie's work to tie all of our efforts in and organizations. My little contribution is just to, you know, do what I do, which is encourage self-reliance, like financially, work, health, food, and vote with your feet, vote mm-hmm. with your behavior, vote with your work. Like, and that's all we can do. And that those of us who do that are more likely to get through the wormhole. And that's what we absolutely have to do. We have to be the ones that get through the wormhole. So self-reliance is something we can all work some way on, however small, however large, and vote with your feet, your behavior, your choices, your money, your finance, and what you do for your livelihood.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and Leslie and Ronnie. Thank you so much. It's been a very insightful discussion. And
thank you.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.